Welcome to the grand final edition of the Your Soup Coach Coach podcast. It's our last show for the year. It's going to be a big one, so certainly looking forward to it. Joined, as we have been throughout the season, by Mark.
G'day, everyone.
And Faz.
Hey, guys.
We'll start off, as we do every week, by letting you guys know how we went on the weekend. So I scored 22-46. I was let down by quite a few players, to be honest. Shannon Hearn, really not good enough, and I'm getting quite sick of it. Heath Grundy, 39. Bad time of the year for that to come. Lacroix with a 69. He hasn't quite worked out as hoped for. And Harvey with a 40 as well. So dropped down to 221st, and unfortunately, unless I pull something out of the bag, I don't think I'll crack into the top 100 for the year.
That's unlucky, mate. No, that was a serious comment. Now that I had to support your cause. It looks like I'm probably just a little bit too far to catch you at the moment, though, Marcus. I did beat you on the weekend with 22.97, but I think I'm probably still about 1,000 points behind you. I'm ranked 28.77, far too low for my liking. I had similar issues with Grundy on the weekend and Puopolo sitting on the bench with 150. Also had Mzungu, Lacroix, Brennan let me down. Managed to make grand finals in three of the four leagues, though, so not too bad there. Hopefully I can beat Dead Sets this weekend. I've got a couple of massive clashes against him. Faz, how'd you go?
Yeah, well, there seems to be a pattern emerging here because, yet again, I'm right between the middle of you two guys. I scored 22.85 this week. Unfortunately, my rank slipped further back. Now it's languishing in 6,781, so pretty terrible year all round. I seem to miss a few of the big problems you had this weekend with Grundy and guys like that, but again, Lacroix let me down. Cox had a 49, but that doesn't really matter because I think most people have him. Isaac Smith on field with a 54 wasn't great. Eyes are well and truly set for 2012, which is what we're going to focus on for most of this show.
So it hasn't been the brightest start to our grand final episode, but we'll crack right into our season review now. So we're going to take a look at the worst and best moves we've each made for the year, talk through the lessons we've learned, and take a look at some golden rules, and then we'll finish off by just naming one player on each line we'd each like to have for next year. So why don't we kick us off with our worst moves for the year. Mark, do you want to start us off?
Sure, and I blame Faz for this move. My worst move is bringing in Jared Brennan at about round 12. Before that, for the previous 10 rounds, he'd been averaging about 110. He had scored like 500s in 6 weeks, and since he's only scored 100 in the whole time, and he's been averaging about 80. So that's a massive fail as a pick for me, really. That's like, it's cost me 300-400 points at least. I was looking at Fife at the time, and I didn't take him because of his shoulder, and it's taken until round 24 for Fife to actually start missing games because of his shoulder, and he's just dominated in that period. So I think I learned my lesson with Jared Brennan. I'd just probably go trying to go a little bit too unique. I was trying to get ahead of the pack and get a bit of a unique pick going, but it really didn't work at all. I was actually looking through my trading history, and there's plenty of decisions that could have been worse moves, like Ward to Mundy, Curnow to Selwood, Tapscott to Chapman, Cochin to Boyd. There's been plenty of trades that... Jack Rewalt to Lacroix. There's been plenty of trades that haven't worked out for me this year. I'm really looking forward to 2012. Get rid of these buys, get rid of these extra bench player, and let's go back to Supercoach, how it should be played.
My worst trade is probably Heath Shaw to Shannon Hearn. He's scored absolutely terribly since. I don't even want to look at the exact scores. I guess it'd be an average of around 65. It's been that bad.
It was averaging over 100 in the few weeks before that, just dominating the competition as well.
And he's had an easy run to boot. So, yeah, that's probably my worst move. And the two other options are Johncock and Broughton at that stage. So it's not like horrible by a massive stretch just because the defensive premium options have been terrible this year, but also probably like underlines how important Heppel was this year. I think he has been an absolute jet, and it sucked that I didn't pick him up. So I guess that would fall under worst moves as well. Faz?
Yeah, as with you, Mark, I had a pretty tough time narrowing it down to just one worst move of the year. had quite a few bad trades, but the one that I've actually highlighted was actually not a trade itself, it was a lack of a trade, and that was not bringing in Kerno at the start of the year. I started with a couple of pretty bad rookies in Jared Irons and Rowan Buick, and I held on to them until fairly late in the year. Don't have either of them in my side now, but just looking here, I think I got Irons out in round 10, Buick out in round 12. If I'd jumped the gun earlier in the season, sort of round 2 or 3, I would have been able to capitalise on Kerno's rapid rise in price and probably do some earlier upgrading. And sort of once you fall behind the pack in Supercoach, it's pretty hard to catch up. So that would be sort of my thoughts for next year would be to not sort of stick to my guns for so long on bad picks. I didn't make a trade until round 6 this year.
Would you say your structure was a bit too rigid then? Because I didn't make a trade until round 6 either, but that was really due to the fact that my side was so tight that I had to wait that long before I could make any real upgrades or anything meaningful, really.
Yeah, well, this was something I was going to bring up later in the podcast, but given that we've got onto it now, I may as well mention it. It was that Irons was the one that I really needed to get out, given that he got dropped after, I think, one or two games. And the problem was that I didn't have enough cash to get him. I'd used up, you know, everything that I had in my bank. So when he was a $91,000 player, I didn't have any options to sideswap him to a better rookie. I would have had to double trade to get Irons to somebody else like a Kerno. And to me, at the time, that felt like a waste. So I'm thinking next year it might be worthwhile keeping, you know, sort of $30,000 in the bank at the start of the year just so I've got that flexibility to move to another rookie without having to do a double trade.
It's definitely a good idea and something that I've taken into this year. I remember, I guess it was last year, where Reigns got injured in round 1 and everyone jumped on Gilbert, and I was just short of Gilbert at that time because I didn't have the $30,000 sitting in my bank. And it's something that a lesson that I took into this year, that you really do need that tiny little buffer that you can play around with a little bit. Like, what if one of your premiums goes down round 1, first quarter, and he's out for a long time and loses a bunch of price? Like, you do need that little bit of a buffer there. So, and that also, it's also with not picking up Kerno. What Impromptu was saying a couple of weeks ago when he came on the show was, if you make a mistake, be willing to just admit it, fix it, and move on, rather than just trying to hold on and get by without, regardless, sort of thing.
All right, we'll move on to best moves now. Hopefully a bit brighter and sunnier trade moves coming up. Mark, do you want to start us off again?
The best two moves that I made, and it was pretty hard to find some good trading by me this year, was in round 13 and traded Mundy to Ablett and Selwood to Pritis. Both Mundy and Selwood I had traded into my team, which didn't work out so well, and had to trade out because they were injured or suspended in the same week. And Ablett and Pritis have both turned out really well. Like, Pritis hasn't totally dominated the competition, but he's been really reliable, quite a good pickup to have in my team. And compared to some of the other choices that were available, I've been pretty happy with Pritis. And getting Ablett when I did has just had a huge advantage to my team. I probably should have got him a little bit earlier. I should have gone Cochin to Ablett after round 9, which I'd sort of planned preseason, but getting Ablett then has worked out really well.
My best move wasn't actually a trade move. It was starting with Steve Johnson over Cyril Rioli. I think that's a massive reason for my current ranking. I think he's averaged like 108 or something, Jono has, and Rioli was the player most people forfeited Hawthorn, Geelong, and Fremantle players for due to the round 6 bye, and of course he got injured and that, so that's easily been my best move for the year.
My best move for this year was just trading out Sandilands when he went down with his injury. I jumped the gun sort of that first week. There was a bit of speculation as to how long he'd be out for, whether he'd be back in just 1 or 2 weeks, or whether it was a longer term injury. I decided to just jump the gun, went Sandilands down to Joel Tippett, which opened up the link with Petrie in my forward line. But the best part about the trade was more what I was able to do with the cash. I used that to go Jared Irons up to Pritis. I think we discussed it on the podcast a bit. I'd sort of mucked up my team structure a bit and had left myself with 4 bottom-priced rookies in the midfield. So there was a spot on field that needed to be upgraded. And if not for that Sandilands downgrade, I would have had to probably do 2 other trades to get the cash before sort of 2 rookie downgrades to get the cash. So it would have meant 3 trades just to fix one spot on the field, which is...
That should have been your worst move.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Let's move on to lessons learnt then.
Okay. So my argument would be that most lessons learnt this year are not actually transferable because of the buys, and we won't have that next year, and the structure will be different, and I don't think it'll be right to go so aggressive again, and you'll be able to pick players from the same team and everything like that. So not all lessons are transferable, but there probably are some. One lesson that I learned is that it's really hard to pick a breakout player, and a lot more of these are going to fail than they are going to succeed. Even when they do succeed, it's rare that they go off completely and you just like get a massive advantage out of it. I think as a general rule, you're just so much better off picking players that have a history of scoring well in Supercoach. And as much as fans of the game, we like to probably use our knowledge to try and speculate a little bit and pick someone that's going to unexpectedly do well. More often than not, you're better off just going with someone that has a history of good scoring.
All right. My first lesson learned was, and I've never previously suffered from this before, but absolutely 100%, you have to trade in premium rookies that you missed out on. And I think Kerno and Heppel were two players that I should have definitely traded in. Heppel, even to the extent that I should have downgraded a premium to pick them up. That's, you know, how valuable they are. If there's a rookie that's, you know, averaging 85 and you should never forfeit that, ever, 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 even if it means downgrading a premium. I mean, you can use that 300K to even better effect. And I know people that did Nick Riewoldt down to Jack Darling are examples of that actually coming off, which brings me to my next lesson learned, and that is to have less faith in established premiums. And this has been, I've suffered from this in the past, I think with Hodgie, I think 2 years ago when he wasn't quite right and just never came good the whole year. I did hold on to him for too long. Example of that this year is Nick Riewoldt. He should have been traded out. Chapman's a bit the same, but they're just players that, you know, because they're premiums, because they're already in your team, because you only have X amount of trades, you always lock them in as just immovable objects. And, you know, I'm not saying definitely start trading willy-nilly, but it's definitely something to keep in mind in future seasons that, yes, that's actually an option to, you know, downgrade an established premium to pick up some cash or just to make better utility out of that money, really.
Was that the opposite to the lesson that I learned?
Is it? I thought yours was breakouts.
Yeah, but like mine was that you should stick with the established premiums and not pick the breakouts.
No, I'm just talking in terms of trading them out. I think you're talking in terms of just selection, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A counterexample is that my wife traded Gibbs out early in the year when he was not doing so well, and then Gibbs has gone on to have a really good season since then, and it's probably caused, even though she made the grand final this week, it's caused her some disadvantages across that time. So I think for as many examples of times when it would have worked, you're going to find times where it wouldn't have worked.
And my last lesson learned would be don't try to pick when an inconsistent player will come good. Hearn is an example of that, and I guess it's pretty similar to your breakout rule, Mark, in that it's so hard trying to pick out when a player is going to come good. You're much better off picking a player who's had a really strong preseason than just trying to pick a breakout because of, like Mark said, you're trying to exploit your football knowledge. So that would be my last one.
Yeah, well, we touched on a few of mine earlier, but I'll just run through them quickly. So, Mark, you mentioned the one that Impromptu gave us, which was to act quickly. If you've made a mistake, just try and fix it as soon as you can and don't let your pride get in the way of things. Also, I'd add, don't skimp on cash, especially when you're buying your rookies. I didn't really like Jared Irons much as a player. It was more, I liked what I was able to tweak with my team with that extra sort of 20K in cash. And, you know, looking back at that now, that one upgrade of a premium somewhere on the field has definitely been far outweighed by how crap a rookie Jared Irons turned out to be. And one that I just sort of thought of then as we were talking would be to try and avoid players that have had interrupted pre-seasons. Chapman is an example of that. Alan Dydak as well. Not many people picked him, but if you had, you'd be bitterly disappointed with how his years turned out. And so a final one here I just saw that I've got noted down would be to take note of any changes that occur to the Supercoach scoring formula. I know, Marcus, you mentioned this earlier in the year when you got Steve Johnson. It had something to do with how they'd decreased the penalty for Clangers. So that sort of made Jono a more attractive pick. And also the changes they made to Ruckman this year would have meant, although most of us already did start with two premium Ruckman, that it was probably a necessity to do so.
I think that brings us pretty nicely to golden rules. So we'll start off with new and consolidated golden rules, which I think one of your points linked pretty nicely into. Preseason theory is one that people should take note of. I think this year, especially following Paul Roos's comments at the start of the year on the couch, I remember him talking about just how few players he's coached in his coaching career could actually play a good season having had an interrupted preseason. I always knew that, but I didn't understand just how significant it was. And I think it was about round 8 that I realized Paul Chapman just wasn't going to be the player that he was last year. I still chose to trade him in, and I mean, he's still panned out okay, but nowhere close to what I expected. And in fact, you know, having had that knowledge, I could have waited for a price fluctuation to pick him up about like 80k cheaper if I just heeded that rule. So that was definitely consolidated for me this season.
And I think the changes to the modern game are sort of making this even more a valid point with the amount of running that's involved for every player on the field. You just can't sort of keep up if you don't have that base fitness that they build up in the preseason. I know I saw an interview with Swanee and he was talking about that. It's that base fitness that's really the hard thing to catch up on, and that's where Collingwood really excel with their trips over to Arizona.
A new golden rule that I think has really been established this year is that you should pick two premium ruckmen. Do not skimp on your ruckmen. I think in years past we've been able to sort of pick a mid-pricer in that R2 spot. Might be tempting to do it next year. McIntosh might be really cheap again, and he worked out really, really well a couple of years ago. But you need to end up with two premium ruckmen as early as possible, just because ruckmen's scoring potential has gone up. They're priced very much like elite midfielders now. You've got a number of ruckmen like Sandilands, Cox, Leuenberger, Mumford and co. that are capable, and Goldstein, that are capable of some really big scoring. McAvoy coming through as well. I think it's going to be really important to have two of them. You can't tag a ruckman. I wouldn't be starting next year without two premium ruckmen myself.
Another consolidated golden rule for Supercoach next year would be just how good mature age rookies are. The ones that sort of immediately came to mind were Kerno, Lower, Mzungu, Puopolo, Isaac Smith, Danny Stanley, Pedersen, Bailey, Savage and Stefan Martin have all been excellent picks. And it just seems that there's less risk involved with picking a mature age rookie. They have the bodies that are able to step straight in. They don't seem to need rests during the season as much as the pure first-year players might need. And another one that I'd say has sort of been formed this year rather than consolidated would be the usefulness of MPP in your team structure. I know a few of us tried it last year. I think the Mitch Clark, Kurt Tippett one was a pretty popular attempt to work MPP into people's sides, which sort of failed dramatically. But this year, having that rookie links with guys like Isaac Smith and Mzungu has been very useful to switch around. And Heppel as well, you know, with whoever you've got in the midfield, like a Michael Hibbert or whatever. It's been very good. And one thing I'd add to that would just be that worth planning that sort of ahead into the later parts of the season rather than picking guys at the start of the year. I know some people started the year with Michael Hibbert in their team, even though he wasn't picked, with a view to being able to switch him with Heppel, where it would have been better to save Hibbert as a downgrade option for one of your other midfielders, other midfield rookies, and you then get the MPP that way.
Now we're going to move on to golden rules that have been debunked. Now, we've only really thought of one, and that would be that second-year players, we used to have a rule where you just don't touch them, but this year, Fife and Rockcliffe and Redden and Martin, even, there have been a lot of second-year players that have emerged as strong super coaches, and I think we could probably put it down to, you know, the talent levels being spread even further and younger players being professional from an even younger age. So it'll be interesting if that carries on into future years, but I don't think it's a definite no-touching rule anymore.
I think that Fife is more of an exception than the rule, and I think more often than not, again, you're going to get burned by picking second-year players. So I'd be looking for a pretty clear exception to the rule, and I don't think it's going to be very clear pre-season who those exceptions are going to be. So still tread with care, if you ask me.
Is there anyone that any of us can identify as an option for next year? Because I know CJ, who writes the Upgrade Watch, has had his eyes on David Swallow for next year. He thinks he's going to break out even further, sort of averaging around the 100 points a game mark. I'm not sure that I agree with him there. But have you identified anyone that you're looking at for next year?
Swallow definitely stands out as the option for me. But then, even then, you're sort of paying a reasonable amount for him, and he's not going to get you to the elite premium level like Fife has. He's not going to get you to 115, 120 average, which is what you need from your midfielders. So I think that you almost have to just put your focus on forwards or backs here, because there's not many second-year players that are going to average 120, which is what you need from your midfielders.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think if you started with Rockcliffe this year, you would have been very happy with, I think, it's not quite 120, but a 112 right from the start of the year. I don't think it's absolutely necessary to finish, you know, with all 120 averages. But, yeah, it's definitely a risky move. I don't think it's, you know, start looking towards second-year players, but I think definitely, you know, that rule of complete blanket no can sort of be lifted a bit. So that brings us to the last segment, which is just we're going to list one player each that we'd like to have for next season. So we'll start off in the back line, and I'm going to go with Brendan Goddard. I think you'll come good again to a 120-plus average type deal, and having only averaged 108 this year, I think he presents a lot of value. Hopefully he's still listed in the back line. He's played all over the place this year, so he might just be slotted into the midfield. But if he's in the back line, I will be certainly welcoming him into my team again.
My backline pick would be Bryce Gibbs will be the first pick. I think he'll still be back mid eligibility. He's improved his average to 105 this year. I don't see any reason why he can't go up again to 110-ish. I think Carlton are going to keep improving, and Gibbs is still developing into a really good player. So Gibbs would be my first.
I've gone for more of a value option, and just looking ahead to the other positions, it seems that that's been the trend for my picks the entire way through. But my guy would be Brian Lake. Only played the 5 games this year, averaged 58 points, or 59 points, sorry. He has been a massive scorer in years gone by. Not sure where he'll be playing next year. The Bulldogs are adamant that they're not putting him up for trade or anything, but you know that sort of changes very quickly once the season is over and we're into trade week and clubs are offering up tasty deals and stuff for him. Irregardless of where Brian Lake is playing, if he gets a full pre-season into him, I think I'll be jumping on him for next year.
Now onto the midfield. My first pick would be Gary Ablett. I think I got him in last out of all three of us, so I know how it feels to not have him, and it sucks, even though he's playing for the Gold Coast. So I'll definitely be welcoming him back into the team next year, and I'll chuck the captaincy on him every week if I can.
It's just always sucked not having Ablett, at least for the last few years. My pick would be Pendlebury. Just watching him in the games, I've just been so impressed by how effective he is. The amount of times when he gets the ball and he'll kick it inside 50 and it'll be marked inside 50. It's just crazy. His effectiveness is similar to Ablett in the sense that he's just going to get a lot of value for points as he plays. And you'd expect him to just keep getting better for a couple more years. Collingwood should still be good, so I really like Scotty Pendlebury as a Supercoach pick.
Yeah, and I know you disagree with my pick here, Mark, and I've gone with Michael Barlow, who obviously missed a large portion of the season with his broken leg and then had some pretty small scores, returned from injury with a 69 and a 21 in his first two games. Followed that up with 400s in a row, though, so I'd probably agree. You mentioned that he's probably not going to get back to the same levels that he did in his first year where he was sort of averaging around the 120 mark, I think. But even so, if he can get back up to 110 plus average at the price that he'll be at. He's only played 8 games so far, so with one extra, that'll obviously take him to 9, and I think you get some sort of discount for that, maybe around the 10, 15%.
No? I don't think you'll get a discount for that, but he is only averaging 87 at the moment, so he will be priced cheaper, but I don't think you'll get a discount. No. You need to play less than 9 games.
I'm just going to put it out there now that from experience from the last couple of years, in the midfield, you want the super, super premiums and rookies, and that's it. Don't pick any of these people that are going to average a bit lower than the super premiums. I know, Marcus, you said about Rockcliffe this year, those examples are so rare, so unlikely to happen. Super premiums and rookies.
Wouldn't you say you're fairly happy with Matthew Pritis, though, this year, averaging 115
I would say that that's pretty close to a super premium this year, though.
I'm sort of expecting something similar to that from...
Given the fact that there's been, like, a few injuries amongst the absolute cream of the crop, you sort of have to go down to the 7, 8, 9, 10th best midfielders, and Pritis would probably fall into that category.
Well, we may as well move on.
Shane Mumford, he's been an absolute beast. 165 and 170 in the last two games. I think made the comment a couple episodes ago. I said he was going to be a superstar for years to come in the Supercoach department, and definitely still think that. Got to pick him. If not for his mid-season lull, his average would be ludicrous. Battled injury a bit in the middle of the season. But, yep, definitely lining up with him, and don't care that he even left Geelong to join the Swans.
I've been a huge supporter of Mumford as a Supercoach pick for the last couple of months, as I think I've mentioned on the show a few times. I've just been like, when I saw him in person, Essendon versus Swans, I was just so impressed by his tap work around the ground. And the throw-ins, people just can't beat him. He just wrestles the way in front, and the effective tap-outs are just crazy, and his mobility is brilliant and marking. And the one thing that does worry me a little bit about Mumford is his durability and his ability to get suspended as well. He does seem to have missed a couple of games over the last 2 years because of those reasons. My pick would be Aaron Sanderlands. I think that he's still got a few really, really good years left, and he should get a little bit of a discount because his average has been affected from some injury-affected games. So in that respect, I think Sandlands will probably be my number one ruckman next year, and then someone between McAvoy, Mumford, Leuenberger, Cox will take ruck number two.
Yeah, and my pick was mentioned earlier in the show, and that's Hamish McIntosh. It's all going to depend. I read this week he'll be playing for North. That's going to be his 100th game, so it really depends on how he scores in this one, because he's obviously missed the entire rest of the season. So if he scores low in this game, then they'll have a big discount from only playing the one game.
All right, now we'll move on to the forward line. My pick is the captain obvious pick of the lot, Nathan Fyfe, absolute jet, second year player playing like premium superstar of the competition. Don't see anybody not starting with him next year, to be honest. I think we all would have put him down if we were picking just our best four, but we want a bit of variety, so Fife's definitely a gun.
It's just occurred to me, Marcus, that Fyfe will almost certainly not be listed as a forward next year. Like, he really hasn't played much time up forward this year at all. Like, he does sort of play all over the ground. He plays a little bit of back, a little bit of forwards, but he's very much been a pure midfielder this year, so I'd be really surprised if he still had the MPP link.
I think I'd still pick him in the midfield even. He's an absolute jet, so still in my team.
My pick, and some people might say that this is a little bit parochial, I'm going to go with Michael Hurley. I think that the Bombers are on their way up. If we can get a little bit of luck with injury, I think that we're going to probably move into at least the top five or six next year. Hurley will be a huge part of that. He'll probably be playing up forward. He has really good scoring potential. He's consistent. He manages to put on goals every week. He has had a couple of down games this year, but he's only a third-year key position player. Bring him into his fourth year, and I'll see a lot more hundreds in his future and pretty decent average. So I would be tempted to pick Travis Cloak as my first pick, but the fact that I hate Travis Cloak so much means that he cannot be considered.
Yeah, I guess my one worry with Hurley would just be that how good he is as a swingman, that those games when he goes back, I haven't actually looked it up, but I'm not sure if he scores quite as well in Supercoach when he's playing in a defensive role. And, you know, with his abilities to do that, I'd be surprised if he plays the entire season up forward. There'll be the odd game where the need sort of crops up to play Hurley in defence. But I'll move on to my pick, and that is Jonathan Brown, who has, again, had an injury-interrupted season, averaging 73, though, from his, I think, about close to 10 games, so there won't be any further discount. But with only a price of a 73 average, that's pretty great for a guy who, between 2005 and 2010, averaged 114, 140, 111, 100, 99, and 98. So with a full preseason behind him, I think that was sort of part of his reasoning behind not playing again this season, was that he'd be able to get a full preseason into his legs, which we've talked about earlier in this show, the importance of getting that full preseason. So John O'Brown at full strength and full fitness, I reckon, could return to his dominant, you know, his dominant self.
A bit worried he might suffer from the Nick Riewoldt factor of this year, but I guess he is a bit more crash and bash, and he is probably a stronger one-on-one, like, tussle, contested mark type player, which works towards his favor, as it does in Cloak's favor. So, yeah, but just a tiny bit wary of the key position forwards, but definitely will be very, very cheap.
Yeah, and I guess my one comment there would be you've got a bit more room for error with Jono this year than you would with Nick Riewoldt this year, just because, you know, Rui was priced so highly. Brownie will come in, you know, a good 100,000 cheaper, I'd say.
Speaking of forwards, I just want to get a little bit of advice for this week. I know that Fife is definitely out. Rioli, it's been said, is definitely out. So with Pavlich lost last week, there's going to be a few people needing to trade in their forward line this week. Is any suggestions on who they should take? I guess one question would be Steve Johnson or Leon Davis at the high end?
I'd be wary of picking Geelong or Collingwood player. I mean, I think each team has averaged about 17, I think Geelong 17-20 Supercoach points a game, and I think Collingwood 17-90, which puts them at about 3.5-3.6k together, and there's only a 3,300 pie. So on average, across the board, the players will score 7% less than their average. So there's just too many premiums in the one game that you don't know. It's a bit of a, you know, lotto in who gets the points and who gets, you know, just a pretty lousy score. So I'm not sure if I'd be picking from that game.
That doesn't leave many options there, mate. We're sort of, that rules out Cloak and so and Chapman, so you're sort of down to...
Sydney are playing Brisbane at the SCG, and Goods has been in insane form.
He's in 95% of teams, though, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think my point would just be that you want it to be a game that's actually mattering, like that means something, and that's pretty much rules you in with Sydney v Brisbane or the Carlton St Kilda game. So I know, and he's another very highly picked player, but Nick Riewoldt scored 163 on the weekend. So if you were one of those that traded him out, he might be an option to bring back in.
Especially with Blues not having any defenders.
Yeah, exactly. Because even Jamison got, you know, towed up by Favola in the VFL this week.
Maybe Ryan O'Keefe looks a bit better from the Sydney game.
Yeah, he's another option that's you know, quite tempting. Probably he seems to not score out quite as highly as Adam Goods, but yeah, as you mentioned, Goods is already in just about everyone's team.
Mark Lacroix is playing Adelaide and is a value choice. He did score 119 against them earlier this year.
And
the other one from West Coast that I just want to point out would be, it's a bit of a left field pick, but Josh Kennedy, who at Patterson Stadium this year has been absolutely killing it, whereas at the other grounds he has had a lot more down games.
Yeah, just with what Marcus said with Lacroix, I'll bring up a couple of years ago, I had this sort of situation. I needed one trade. I had one trade left for the grand final, and yeah, Marcus recommended me Mark Lacroix, and he came in and scored about 170 points, I think. So
yeah,
if that's a pattern that's going to continue, then yeah, jump on over to Lacroix.
All right.
Yep.
So I guess we should wrap the show, last show for the season.
It's tearing
so sad
up here.
It's a bit sad.
How about we go around the table in a couple of sentences, if you can. Why do you think you did well or poorly this season, and final words for the season? We're all happy to do that. Mark, you want to kick us off?
Sure. Why I did not do as well as I'd expected. I had a super start to the year. I think after round two, I was ranked about 38th, and I was like, yep, this is going to be awesome, and it just really didn't work out. I think I probably wasn't quite aggressive enough early. Picks like Mundy and Selwood in the midfield really didn't work out so well. So I don't really want to blame bad luck, because I think I've made a couple of poor trades this year, and my starting side probably wasn't perfect. I think I've been a little bit too cautious about the buyers as well. I think I planned for the buyers. My whole team was designed around the buyers, and I really should have. I think the gung-ho approach to the buyers has worked a lot better this year for teams like Impromptu at the top, having Gibbs and Scotland in his team and not worrying about that too much. So while I'm on that subject, good luck to Impromptu this week. Hope you take down the 50K, mate.
Yep. Faz? I'd probably go with a similar reasoning as to my poor performance this year. Would just be too conservative with the trades. Not trading until round six was a mistake. And I know this has all the hallmarks of, you know, a dummy spitter, but I'd say this season's Supercoach has had a bit more luck involved in it. Just with the amount of buys, it means that later in the year, people are playing rookies on field. Like, for example, Puopolo scoring 151 last week. If this was a normal year, not many people would have been playing him on field, and sort of that those advantages
like lower coming in 140 and then next week scoring a 10.
Yeah, exactly. But it just seems like more of those things have come down to luck with the amount of buys. So yeah, I guess I'm looking forward to 2012, where to me it seems like a bit more of an even playing field.
I gotta admit, I will miss having to negotiate around the buys. They were made for good conversation. I would probably, I consider it a relatively successful season for myself. A bit upset I wasn't aggressive enough. I finished with a 4 trades that I really just didn't need. I held back on bringing Kerno in for no reason. But I'd probably pinpoint my good ranking to the fact that I had Steve Johnson. I think that's a massive factor. And in addition to that, I think I maximized value. I traded Libba out in round 10, which was a lot later than many people did, and I got extra 90K for him. My trade-ins have been relatively good. So just conservativeness really just worked out in the end, because it was a well-planned team. And I think I did get lucky with not running into injuries as well. So that would be me.
The reason why Marcus has done better than me? Purely luck.
All right, that's a good note to end the show with.
Yeah.
I guess we'll, hopefully Collingwood don't win the premiership.
Yep. Go Cats. Hopefully we win the premiership. And best of luck for the last round. Thank you guys so much for joining us for this journey in 2011. We hope our show has gone from strength to strength, and look forward to being back next year. Thanks, guys.
It's been a pleasure.
Cool beans.